Hello, everyone, and welcome to Tabletop Radio Hour, your podcast for everything tabletop. My name's Zach, and this week, I'm joined by the regular crew. I've got Mark and Logan. Mark, how are you today?
I'm doing snazzy. How you doing, Logan?
Fantastic. Zach, how's awesome. It going?
I'm doing very well. We're joined by some other people at the table today.
Those are real? I'm not just hallucinating?
Yeah, I thought I was just seeing them too.
Okay,
but yeah, no, they're actually here. We're not as crazy as
thought. It seemed a little crowded in here.
Hello, friends.
But Mark recently went to QuestCon down in Orlando.
Yeah, it was
down in that Florida area, and he brought some friends back to the studio. I will let these friends introduce themselves, but we've got a few individuals here from Adventures on Tap. How are you, gentlemen?
Fantastic.
Doing well.
Thank you. Beautiful studio you guys have here, by the way.
Thanks.
The natural light is just...
Oh, it's stunning.
Familiar.
Yeah, it's all mushroom-based. Mushroom-based natural light. It's a great place for a cave to, you know, illuminate itself with the mushrooms.
And it feels just like my own home.
Weird.
Yeah, that's the best part. Yeah. We're happy to be hallucinating with you guys today.
Hey! I think we call that roleplay, but that's a different sort of hallucination.
Yeah, it's roleplay.
And that's what we're here for, baby.
Basically a group hallucination.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm Nick Larson. I'm one of the members of Adventures on Tap. And QuestCon was our first con, and we were happy to meet Mark there and tell him all about what we do. And I brought two friends along today. You guys?
Hello, I am Friend One. I am Rider Blue, also a member of Adventures on Tap, if that wasn't already implied by what Nick said, and I'm just darn excited to be here.
Hey, I'm Ferg. Also, I guess you get the idea by now with Adventures on Tap.
It's good to verify that you haven't just snuck in. So, yes, also.
Fair point.
We badged at the door of this mythical studio.
There you go.
But yeah, you know, just excited to, share what we're doing.
Awesome.
Speaking of which, we probably should start with, what are you doing? What is Adventures on Tap?
So,
great question.
I would answer that question with two questions of my own for anybody who might be in the greater Orlando area. If you like craft beer and you like Dungeons and Dragons, well, Adventures on Tap hosts the premier dice rolling event at craft breweries in Orlando. We run 4 to 6 hour one-shot adventures for old heads and newcomers alike, all with a focus on supporting local businesses and also raising money for charity.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
to,
just dope.
To Ryder's point. We pair with local charities, pair with local businesses, and we host live play D&D events. And really, it's all just playing for a cause.
That's
how long have you guys been doing that?
So we have been Adventures on Tap since June.
Officially,
right?
Yeah. June. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our first event was May, but that was a carryover. So we, in this capacity, we've been doing it since June. I think we've had 5 total events, and we've raised $3,600 just from participants. Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
Wonderful.
Wow. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, the charity is really the big piece for what we do. It kind of drives everybody's motivation to also, you know, you get to play and all that stuff, but we all agree, you know, love local charity.
Well, and for a new startup charity, and only for, you know, 3 whole months now, a little bit more, that's really well done. You know, startup charities take some time to get going usually. There's usually some... You know, it takes a little momentum to get some impact, and that sounds like you're having some pretty solid impact.
Yeah, it's been a great time so far.
Yeah, we found a nice little conflux of people that happen to like RPGs and like craft beer. It's a pretty good Venn diagram. It's almost a complete circle from what we found. So we really rode that margin, and we have people coming back time after time. Honestly, we are running out of space more than anything. So as soon as we put tickets up for, you know, people, they get nabbed up. So we haven't had any problem filling seats. It's just finding seats to fill.
What are some of your main charities, or does it change every time?
Well, it changes at the big monthly event every month. This past month, we were working with the Greater Orlando Pet Alliance. Before that, it was the Ronald McDonald House. And okay. In June, it was the Zebra Coalition. Nice, and nice. I think we have our charity picked out for the next one.
I've seen a bunch of United Way things going on. It's like United Way month or something.
Yeah, we have a ton of really great volunteers in our organization, because it's a for-profit, charity-based organization. So right now I think our metric so far is that we've given away 50% of our revenues to donations on top of that 3,600 I quoted earlier. That was just from participants.
Oh, okay.
So we have a wonderful volunteer who is our charity guru, and she goes out and finds charities, makes sure they're local, makes sure that the money is going to the right place, and really does all the vetting for us, which is phenomenal because we all have day jobs and it's volunteer work. So yeah. it helps mm-hmm. us a lot. So she went and verified all of those other charities, and she tries to find us, you know, ones that correspond with something going on during the month. Unfortunately, we did Ronald McDonald House instead of the National Sandwich Day, which is what I wanted to do.
But she
tries to find something that corresponds. So I think we have suicide prevention going on this month.
Yes, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention of Central Florida, because September 5th through 11th is Suicide Prevention Week.
Nice.
Nice.
Right.
Wonderful.
So we find that a lot of our charities tend to revolve around things of that nature, and it's a sad fact that everyone needs help, especially our local community. So we go through Absolutely. It with the, you know, a high tide raises all boats kind of thing. We try and get our vendors some extra cash flow, and then we purchase stuff from them that count as donations for our raffle, and then our participants buy those tickets for our raffle to get those things, and it's a beautiful little community we've got going on.
Yeah.
So what exactly does one of your events look like?
Yeah.
Do you have an audience? Do you, you know, they're, one of your GMs? Do you have outside players? Do you
sort
just
of an audience? So typically we have between 6 and 8 DMs all running their individual one-shot adventure. Mm. Each of those tables typically has between 6 and 8 people at it.
Okay.
Yeah, if you've ever been to a live play event at like a con, it's very similar. We have a bunch of tables that you come in and you get sat down at the table. Depending on who you get sat down at, you're either going to make a character, you know, for the adventure that they've created, and they'll guide you through it. Otherwise, most of our tables, mine included, you just sit down and pick a character, and then you're ready to roll. You don't even need dice. Mm-hmm. So we try and make it super friendly, and D&D 5e and hopefully D&D 1 makes that super, super easy. So guiding people through it, I think we can get people to actual role play and get through the, you know, meat of the rules in 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Nice.
Yeah. I would say a big chunk of our audience are newcomers to the game. It's people who know what D&D is, but they've never actually played before, and it seems like they have a pretty smooth time getting into things.
Yeah, we have a large portion of our people that their first time ever playing D&D was at one of our events, and they have not stopped, yeah, which is awesome. Really what we like to do.
Yeah.
There's nothing that really beats that excitement that you see on somebody's face when they're rolling dice for the first time, and they're like, oh man, you know, I'd always heard about this, but I never knew just quite how awesome it could be. And yeah, just like Nick said, it's fun getting to grow the community in that regard.
Absolutely. Or watching the light die from a new player's eyes when you kill the
other. Oh, yeah. That's happening.
That's also always a good time.
Wow.
Nick is ruthless. I mean, if we're being honest.
I am ruthless.
Welcome to D&D. I will make you cry.
No. I don't try to make people cry except for the good way. Like, I really want them to feel it and then, you know, like, put them through the ringer emotionally, not, like, frustrating.
Right.
And I feel like that's a memorable experience, because what do you remember more than character deaths, you know?
Yeah. The character successes.
Amazing, crazy shit that people do.
Trauma is the way to go.
That too.
I don't know, man. I was in a game, and one of my fellow players somehow sleight of handed stuff out of a mimic's mouth while I was sleeping. That was a crazy ass moment.
Yeah, that's,
and I definitely
that's
forget.
Super cool.
We'll never forget that. But also, we had a very cool DM.
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, we joke all the time, but we've thoroughly vetted all of our DMs. We all follow the rule of cool. So if you do something awesome, it's gonna work, right? If you have a crazy good idea, it typically happens. I had a player who brought his son along, and they were trying to help somebody that had fallen down a cliff, and the son was playing, I think he's 10, he was playing a druid, and he was like, I'm gonna turn into a giraffe and lower my neck down. And that guy went from being 50 feet down a cliff to 10 feet down a cliff real quick. And it was freaking awesome, right? So
yeah,
we all follow that kind of thing. And there may be some player deaths, but it was definitely, you know, unavoidable at that point. We're all there to have fun. So
Right. Yeah, and if everybody's cool with it, you can get that feeling of consent from everybody at the table. They're like, yeah, this fits. I would love for my hero to go out in a heroic death. That's awesome.
Yeah, we do that. We make sure that we add, like, you know, we have the whole thing, you know, especially when you're doing a public event, you know, it's just best to err on the side of caution. So we always make sure that if there's any kind of event or any kind of recent thing that is occurring in someone's personal life, they can talk to, you know, me on the side during one of our breaks. You know, one example I always use that pretty common, like if someone recently lost like a dog, you know, if somebody has like a pet or a ranger pet or something, a beastmaster, you know, stuff like that can happen. You just want to be able to avoid anything like that. We make sure we cover all those bases before we start.
Yeah.
Always. Especially in our community, people role play for a reason, right? So you tend to have a lot of things that are touchy issues, whether they know it or not sometimes. So I always give trigger warnings for my games, especially like the Halloween one where I thought I had really spooked it up, you know, and boy, the players are way weirder than you could ever
seriously
be. In the drawing room.
With our trigger warnings, I've never had anybody come to, I mean, I'd have to ask the other DMs to see what their experience was, but I've never had anybody say that, you know. So I guess that's kind of.
I've had a few that have said certain things, and it made it really, really easy for me to steer the game around those things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if something's bothering somebody enough, they'll tell you.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's just giving that, you know, that space for them to talk.
Well, just even bring it up. Yeah, hey, you know, this is, you know, some stuff I want to focus on. Or is there anything else here that anybody would like to bring up? You would like to talk to me on the side. And a lot of them don't say anything, but then, like, later on, like, say, on the break, they might be like, okay, I feel what the game is about now. I would be worried about running into, let's say, you know, spooters or something like that, you know? Don't want to deal with nasty long legs. Great. Okay, cool. But they didn't think about it then beforehand and probably wouldn't have thought about it as something to bring up, especially with a new player, except for you brought it up. You lay out a space for them to say something, which is good.
Yeah,
And every time I do the trigger warnings, I always break for a beer afterwards. Yep. So it's like, hey, if you want to talk to me at the bar real quick, I'll be there grabbing a beer. And having beer nearby really helps usually. whether it's every time we change maps or change scenes, all right, everyone go get a beer. And that helps our brewery partners and it helps us. And it really just helps drive everything. It's a good time.
Helps the players take a little mental break.
Yep.
Oh, for sure.
If they need
to. And then what I love the most is that I would say 90% of the time, once we start to get through like the first act, let's say, you'll go up and grab something to drink as well. And they'll be like whispering to themselves, trying to avoid your earshot. like doing a little like, what do you think this is? What do you think's going on here? And you're like, I'm not listening. You know, you can talk freely.
Nice.
I have that or the opposite, where they bum rush you at the bar. Hey, what's going on? Is this what's happening? Is it? And it's like, give it 5 minutes. You're going to find out, you know?
Right.
Come on, my guy.
Also, keep telling me your ideas, because I'm totally not changing this to whatever you think makes you feel brilliant.
No, of course
that's
not.
DM 101, man.
Right?
You got to steal ideas.
All right, I want to circle back here. You said you vet each of your DMs, so I'm curious, what is your, like, I guess, practice or structure for bringing in new DMs, or for kind of sharing the dream and the focus and keeping you all of, you know, each DM has its own style. Each person likes to do their own way. So how do you keep it so it's within your brand? Do you have like a teaching or a vetting process that involves like kind of working people through it? What does that look like?
So we really like for our new DMs to actually play at a table in an event game, just so we can get a sense of how they like to do things, their interpretation of the rules, how they like to role play. All that really comes through best, I would say, through actual play. And then we have a very, very simple, I hesitate to even call it an interview sheet. It's like more like a survey that goes through some basic stuff like, hey, you know, what's your philosophy when you sit down to DM? What are your favorite systems? Let's like the coolest thing you've ever seen a player do, and how do you feel about it? I feel like you really get a sense for people doing things that way, and you kind of weed out the I'm trying to think of a polite word for it, the neckbeards.
Jackwagons?
Yeah, jackwagons. I apologize to any neckbeards that may be. Ragnards, yeah, that's the word I couldn't think of.
You say that as I stroke my neckbeard.
We really look for very personable, friendly people as much as we look for people who really understand the game well.
Yep.
Yeah, our vetting process has leveled up over the 3 months. It went very quickly from, hey, let's have a beer and talk about D&D to, hey, let's get some actual data whatsoever. But we also look back at it where we are incredibly lucky to have the people that we have. It is a volunteer organization, and so we were pretty much come one, come all, you know, anyone that wants to do this for free and spend this egregious amount of time doing these things for charity, please jump in. But there was always this rule of cool mentality and making sure that that everyone vibed with it. And it was pretty clear either when you just had a beer or after the first event whether people could hang. And of course, because we're a volunteer organization, we're trying now to pay our DMs, make it worth their while at least a little bit, pay for some materials or whatever it went into their games, which does cost a lot of time, money, and effort, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
And so now that we are endeavoring to pay people for their even a modicum of their time, now our vetting process has gotten a little bit more you know, like a survey or whatever,
I suppose.
Yeah. And actually, the guy responsible for that is Ferg, if you want to say anything else.
I just building off what you and Ryder both said, to answer the initial question, I think the best way that we are able to do that is sitting down and playing. And for everyone who's been brought on as a DM since we started this process, quote unquote, we've always had it so that they were kind of sponsored or vouched, however you want to put it, for by a DM whose table they were at. And for a lot of these people, that they've been at the tables multiple times. Mm-hmm. So you really, really, really get a good feel when you sit down and play with them, know what kind of player they are. And because like Nick and Ryder both said, playing gives you a little bit more leeway than DMing. You're kind of in a one track mind. Like you're trying to corral everybody on the story that you're trying to lead them through in this amount of time, right?
Particularly in your guys' format, where you have new players and it's a one off. It's very much like any sort of con game, which we've talked about here on the show recently, where it is very focused. You have a short amount of time to get people into the game, knowing what the hell they're doing, and going somehow in a direction, but they're all a bunch of cats, you know,
Exactly.
You'd be surprised.
And
you'd be surprised.
And teaching the rules.
Yeah. We have the rules. The rules are remarkably easy to what I was saying earlier. I print out a little one pager and I say, hey, read over this. If you have any further questions, you know, feel free to interrupt.
Yeah.
And yeah. I so rarely get interruptions. You know, I find that people at the table turn and help. And luckily all of our DMs are super, you know, free and easy. And again, we've been very, very lucky in the amount of talent that we've acquired and in a voluntary basis too, which is, I feel like, so much harder to staff, but I think currently we have 15 active DMs right now. And
wow.
At our last event, we had 7 tables and, five of those seven tables were people brand new to our organization. You know, we gave our other DMs a break, really, and really saw what these kids could do, and it worked out great.
Yeah.
Everyone loved it. We got amazing feedback, and it's just a wonderful community.
Yeah, I've been joking, you know, since we brought these new people on, and I've been doing the little process that, like, everybody is infinitely more qualified than I was started. Like, oh, I have this experience. I've done this. You know, I've been doing this, this, and this. And I was like, you know, Nick kind of was just like, hey, you want to come hang out? And I was like, sure.
That's how that goes, though, because it's like you started a thing and it draws those who would love to do that and have been just kind of waiting for that opportunity, you know? So it's kind of that you're teaching them a way, but they're also teaching you a way. You're kind of both trading back and forth and inspiring.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. And I think it's something that came out of the pandemic, right? We've been doing this for a little while now under different names. And then this charity focused one is what we are full set on now. But Ferg and I were one of the first in this group to be doing this. And man, the level ups are just crazy because I came in with my little Chessex mat and my cardboard cutouts.
Yeah, I still use that.
Yeah. And now you see some of the people. I mean, Ferg is blying a little bit because he also has a fog machine, you know, for a foggy woad and all sorts of stuff that he's brought in. And we have some massive creations that get put down on the table. And here I am with my Chessex mat still, like, yeah, we have some really talented people with a lot of time on their hands. And I can't tell them how thankful I am.
That's awesome.
What are the venues look like? How much space do you have to work with most of the time? You know, what does that look like?
So we try to partner with larger breweries. And one of the most recent ones we were in has room for 7-8 tables, which is a lot, you know, because we're fitting 6 people around a table that's big enough to have a 3x3 map on it. But you know, we're going for other format breweries as well. We have the smaller ones where we can fit 1 or 2 tables, or, you know, somewhere we just sit outside. But
as we've said earlier, you know, we have a very strong focus on working with local craft breweries, and they're not always the biggest. Usually they have at least 2 tables for us to run, and, you know, that's enough for people to have a good time, I would say.
Yeah. Absolutely. We have to be chameleons that we're kind of always adapt to surround, trying to make it work as best as possible. So that's probably one of the things that has been one of the bigger, I don't want to say a roadblock, but, you know, one of the speed bumps. I think it kind of touched on a previous space and making sure that, you know, some of these breweries do have space, but they don't have the tables that we can use. Other breweries have a few tables that are excellent, but then they don't have space. So we're kind of always adapting to those.
And when we have the larger format breweries, we try to also bring out local vendors, right? So we have dice makers, we have people that have dice trays or make minis, or we have this awesome company that we work with, Crafty Gamer Shop, that does candles.
We're familiar.
That's sent your room. They're awesome, man. Carlos, who runs that, is just the best.
He's the coolest dude.
Yeah. And we try to have our local vendors out with us when possible, and then when we can't, we're trying to kick off a consignment shop so that they can still get their sales when we don't have room to facilitate them. And so really that's what we're about, between the local beer, the local vendors. We really want to uplift local, and we find that a lot of people feel the same.
Yeah.
So what's the table size then? What are, is it like a 4-player table or a 6-player table or a 10-player table? What's it look like?
Really depends on how many tickets we sell and how much space we have. It tends to run between 5 and 8 on the far outside. You know, if we lose a DM and we have to reshuffle things a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We shoot for 6 players per table, which is pretty easy for most of our DMs to manage in a one shot, at least. You know, if you were having to track backgrounds and political leanings and things like that, it would be a lot more difficult. But especially for a one shot, I think I've had up to 10 at my table at one point. And we really just, you know, give them space. And once they have the space to role play and the sandbox to play in, it's mostly just keeping it on the rails. It's a poor choice of words in this community, but just keeping it from,
that's the truth,
from
a one shot
going crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I get it. Rails is bad, but like, yeah. If the roller coaster ride I am on goes off the rails, I'm a little bit scared for my life. So yeah. There are fun things that are on rails. Yeah. It's not always a railroad.
Exactly.
And I feel like we can't sing the praises of our DMs enough. Kind of circling back a little bit to what we look for in people, we really like to bring in DMs that are good at effectively managing a group of people, and they're all great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We haven't had any issues yet, and especially with the, like we were talking about with the rails, I know personally my games never go to plan, even if I put them on really tight rails. So what I've done lately is just throw a general premise at them and try to keep up. I wing it a lot more than a lot of the others around the table, but if you were to go around our event, you would hear some wacky stories going on, and really, I think that's the fun of it. A lot of our DMs, if they're reusing an adventure, you know, which doesn't happen that often, but when they do, you could sit and play in it a second time and not even realize it sometimes because of how wacky it got the first time or how wacky it got this time.
I mean, outside of it being an event sort of situation that you guys are running, that's just adventures. Like,
right.
Because the table changes, players, the characters.
Players do that every time.
Yeah.
Yep. it can get pretty wild pretty quick. Luckily, the one thing that all of us are super adamant about is you're here to have fun and not to ruin somebody else's fun. So,
oh yeah,
that I think is the only thing I've ever had an issue with is, and it ended up not even being an issue. It was just one of those quick asides, which every DM for any game, really, I guess GM in that case, would tell you is it comes up, you know, where you're like, hey, I know you're a thief, but quit stealing the guy's precious baubles, you know,
right.
And just making sure that, you know, people are having their own fun, not squandering other people's fun something that does come up, but you know, it's super rare. We have a really good group of participants too.
Players have been
that's
great.
Player wrangling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think in part of like, when we start our adventure preamble for these, I always make it a point to say that this is a collaborative. So right away, I'm just setting the expectation that we're working together toward the same. Now, like Nick has said, we've been really lucky. We haven't had come up. Sometimes, you know, you have to, like you said, corral them. Hurt him back in, but nothing, you know, none of these D&D horror stories that you read on the internet.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, that is yet to happen.
Yeah.
Hey, it's only been 3 months. That it's bound to happen.
That's just
we've been doing this,
you know?
Now for, I think, what is it, for 2 years now? You and I have been doing these one-shot games.
Yeah, in January
so
it'll be 3 years.
We've had plenty of opportunity for failure, and Nothing really terrible has happened. Like Ferg said, it's mostly just corralling. And, you know, with these various DMs around, I think the best thing for me is just the cornucopia of things to steal. because we have one guy, his name's Dan, and he has some of the most imaginative adventures. but I really like the way he opens his game where he says, he asks people their favorite movie, he asks people, you know, their favorite song. He tries to get to know them a little bit, and then he sets very rigid expectations where he says, okay, you are in a mystery game, and you are going to go through this, and you're going to, you know, experience something, and then you're going to have a combat. And it really gets people in the mindset that, oh, this is a one shot. We're only here for 6 hours or 4 hours. Let's get our heads together. And yeah, I've found
really
that,
like that.
I don't get to do it as well as he does. So I'm really burying the lead a little bit. But when you see it happen at his table, the gelling of people is almost immediate.
Yeah, no, and that's a great example. I was going to say, like, that's perfect, because, you know, so often I think as DMs, we think we have this great story or idea or whatever else, and we're going to show something that's going to surprise people. And most of the time people can see through whatever the thing is. You're better off just setting that, you know, straightforward expectation up front, and then everybody's on the same page, because guaranteed, no matter what you think is going to happen, they think something different. So you're going to wow them with a very simple plot, because their mind's going a different direction. So just helping them be able to be part of that is huge. That's amazing. Communication, number one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The most powerful thing I think I've seen is Ryder, actually, his beautiful wife, did one recently where she just had a really vivacious theme, you know? Like, it was immersive and super just in your face. You could not avoid the theme. And I don't want to give it away for other people that are playing it, but she did a lot of acting, and something about that, you know, here you are, you're in this theme, it's very, very well thought out, and then people just instantly take to it, and it makes a great story.
Yeah,
it was incredible. That was her first one shot that she had ever written. She just absolutely blew it out of the water.
Wow.
And it was her first time DMing D&D, right?
Yes, she had experience in other systems, and she has played, like, she plays in, of course, the one-shots that we do around here.
Right.
And some of the GMs that work for AOT, they have their own home games that we're both in, and she's in my campaign that I'm running. So she had a strong backbone for all the rules and how things are supposed to work, and the rest was just storytelling, and she's wonderful. She's just a natural storyteller.
Yeah, it was very good. I heard a lot of the feedback for her first game, and that was great stuff. It was a good time. So yeah, that's our format. That's what we do. It's a really good time where we try and bring people in, and we have, thankfully, I will do one shout out, Wayne. We have one guy that has come to every single one of our events, and we have another one, Garrett, that is doing that now. Garrett. And just
Kyle.
Kyle, big fan of Kyle always brings like 9 people to these events too. So.
Oh man.
Yeah, I'm a bartender on the side. Yeah. And having regulars is the best, right? So having regulars for these AOT games is just wonderful. And that's then awesome. They go around to the different DMs to experience all the different tables as well. They don't just stick with one, which is really cool that as a player you get to, like, how rare is that? If you think about it in your history as a player of any RPG, really, of just being able to sample different DM styles, because it's so formative in the way you play.
It is.
Right. So having different ones available to you, I feel, is super powerful, and makes you a better player.
That's cool.
Especially,
like,
for new players. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, with this sort of the format, you know, either people are coming to this so they can try something without much commitment, or they're coming because they really like to have something diverse and unique. Not everybody likes to pop around to different groups, different DMs or whatever. And the fact that you have absolutely regulars that are coming that are on purpose trying to find the new DMs is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really like seeing players that come in with their biases and their bad or good habits sit down at someone that just has such different style.
Yeah.
I have players from my home group that have come in and played at other ones, and they hear things that they know mean something in my game, and they're just, you know, on the edge of their seat, they're waiting for it, and then it doesn't happen. And I love that so much.
That's great.
Where I always, I will ask them a question like, oh, are you sure you want to do that? And it almost always means something bad when I say it, and others don't. So I love seeing them get tilted that way.
Yeah.
And, that's great. It's great.
You mentioned that you were kind of growing your GM pool. Are there any kind of future directions or
goals? What's your 5-year plan? How are you expanding to other states? Like, what's the
That's it's funny, you really made the whole thing question.
Right here, right now.
Yeah. I'll go.
Yeah, please.
It's under construction, so
word.
It's really tough to answer that. We have a meeting coming up with like all of our stakeholders in the business, so to speak, right now. We're gonna touch on some of these subjects. I wish we could answer something more definitive. I think at the very least, we'll just continue to adhere to our mission, which is, you know, shop local, drink local, give local. So as long as we're doing those three things, whatever we end up turning into, whatever that looks like 5 years from now, you know, it better have those three things.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And Ferg is being real humble in this. He and Ryder actually are elected officials, basically, that help run what we do. And so he's given the political answer. I think more than anything, we're just nerds trying to play for fun and for good. And if we can keep doing that, I think we'll all be happy. And as for the GM pool, we take them, you know, as we need them. And we luckily have had a lot of really wonderful individuals reach out and say, hey, I saw what you did. I came to one of your events. I'd love to be part of it. And then we say, hey, awesome. Let's sit down, have a beer and talk about it. And as for, you know, expansion and things like that, when we set up our business three months ago, we really came into it with lessons learned from previous iterations.
Mm-hmm.
of types of doing things, and really we gathered similar minds and said, hey, we're really into the charity side of this. We're really into the doing good part. We're not out to make money. There is a certain part of it that you have to have money, you know, got to spend money to make money kind of thing. So the money that we do bring in goes to marketing materials and, you know, trying to make a better polished event, but no one is on staff, like no one gets paid. So really it's all about just doing good and trying to keep that going. So really expansion is just Orlando right now. We're trying to find other breweries that we fit in and trying to find a good model that works for everyone.
Yeah.
And to Ferg's point, we have a business meeting actually later today, because we're businessmen and we pack things in.
Yeah. 100%.
and we're really just trying to, you know, face the nation, kind of figure out where our audience is, where our stakeholders are. We consider not only our DMs and our, I guess, administrative personnel stakeholders, but also the breweries, the vendors, the charities that we work with. We consider them stakeholders as well. And if they have a change in direction, you know, we want to go where the wind is going. And if it turns out the wind isn't blowing in a favor that we like, then, you know, we'll have to, you know, right the ship. But so far, so good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'd be lying to say if we didn't have multiple people come up to us and ask, like, when are you coming to Miami? When are you coming to Tampa?
Absolutely, yeah. So, Tampa, Gainesville.
Oh, yeah.
The interest is there.
We ran into that a lot at QuestCon, people that traveled to Orlando who was like, hey, you know, I would love to see something like this in my home city.
Right. Yeah. Right, or even just the disparate cities that are around Orlando. Right. We have, you know, Claremont, Castleberry, all of these places that, they're like, hey, we have this one local bar. We would love to see you in it. And it's like, oh man, we'd love to. Honestly, we would. But it's so hyper local and such a volunteer based thing. It's herding cats really to get one of these events going. And once it happens, man, it just takes off like a rocket. And it's wonderful, but we're all exhausted, you know. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. It takes a lot of energy to run a game. Period. It takes a lot of energy to run a nonprofit. It takes a lot of energy to do a special event for either or both. And you're trying to put all that shit together. Like, what is wrong with you? No, I'm kidding. But that's amazing. Like, that puts a lot of juice into it. And it's, you'll do a 4-hour game and you'll need like a day off. Like,
yeah,
for that sure. Stuff's and our biggest enemy right now is burnout, right? Yeah. Like we have our DMs and they come up with so many creative ideas. And honestly, I'm tapped. I've been doing this for 2 years on and off with different organizations, and my juices are my battery's low. So seeing these new guys do it and some of the stuff they bring to the table, it's reinvigorating. But yeah, for sure, it can be exhausting.
That's actually
go ahead.
I was going to circle back on the whole nonprofit thing real quick. So if your question is more to, you know, on point.
No, okay. Not really.
All right. So day job for me, I work in banking, particularly treasury stuff. So I'm always curious on how like things work and fund. And I just want to make a call out. You guys say that you're for profit to support charities and 50% of all proceeds go to that. And I wanted to you know, use that as a quick note to call out, like, when people think of nonprofits or think of charity events, they're like, oh, 100% of proceeds. You don't realize how much that costs to run a thing. And yeah. If you have an entity like this where everybody's volunteering and you're able to give out 50% of that to the charities intended, that's actually really good. Because a 100% not-for-profit doesn't really work and definitely does not sustain itself. You know, so
I mean, I come from a finance background, and we all got together, and when we formed this business, we knew we needed to get an LLC or something on paper, a C corp, something. So we really went through the different styles of business, and we said, "Hey, what would we like to see?" And we definitely heavily leaned towards nonprofit, where all of us wanted us to be a nonprofit, but the structure is so limiting and so, and like you were saying, you can say you're 100% nonprofit and $1 goes to whatever charity, so long as you don't make a profit. Where, you know, what we do, 50% of our revenue goes to those charities in one form or another, and that is huge. It's a bigger margin than any other not-for-profit that you'll see out there. And honestly, that just came down to structure, right?
Because the rest of that's not going towards profit that we wanted. That extra, that other 50% going out, is going towards profit. That's right. Support. That's admin costs. That's making sure your DMs have what they need and tools and stuff like that. That's equipment costs. That's, you know, marketing. Right. I mean,
and our plan isn't to make a profit. That's just how we had to structure our business, right? We plan on giving end of the year dividends, you know, if we do have any profit at the end of the year.
Right.
But really, it was just about that corporate flexibility of being able to spin off new corporations or things like that as needed, you know, when we do eventually expand, hopefully. To that point, we're really nonprofit people running a for-profit company. And I think it's evident in the way we spend our money, which isn't necessarily good, but it's donations. So,
That's just really cool.
We like it. Yeah.
Right.
Mark,
that's a really neat thing that you guys have here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I was, you know, when I met you guys, I was just kind of blown away by the originality of what you guys were doing. And I was just kind of curious about your inspiration. You know, what kind of put all this together? And are you aware of anybody else out in the world that is like you in other parts of the world?
I'm sure it exists. Yeah.
So when we got started 2 years ago, it was in another form where the expectation was that people were going to bring their own games, their own home games, to a brewery and sit down and play for a day. Basically a change of venue for your D&D group, where you could get some beer specials and things like that. And we really transformed it into a, you know, come all, free for single players to come down and sit and play. And so really we took that concept that we had created and throughout iteration found that what we and what our players wanted was community. And so we went through some transformation. We went through a crucible of sorts, and out of it came Adventures on Tap. And so we have others out there that are doing similar. We've seen on Facebook or other things. But honestly, I don't think we'd ever seen it other than going to like cons and seeing people sit down and play with strangers, because it is hard to do sometimes. It's hard to wrap your brain around. So you want me to just role play in front of people I've never met? And I find it to be the opposite more than anything. Like, if I never have to see these people again, which is really a lie we tell people because we have a lot of return customers.
Say, yeah, but, right.
you'll be back.
Dude, yeah. you can be whoever you want. You can be whatever jackwagon. You know, just don't be completely rude. You don't have to see these people ever
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
Yeah. See you on Tuesday. Yeah.
Exactly.
It won't matter next time you're here.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
And then ironically enough, those same people, they're like, hey, let's come back and do this and let's sit at the same guy's table again. Yeah. And we love seeing that. I can't tell you, I do the seating charts for, you know, who's at what table, and it is completely random. Unless I receive an email or I receive an Instagram message or I receive something that says, hey, I really want to sit at Josh's table, or hey, I really want to sit at Eric's table. And you'd be surprised how many of those I get where people are like, hey, I really enjoyed sitting at this guy's table. Can you put me there again? Even for people that aren't DMing for that session, I get so many requests to sit at Dan's table or Ferg's table. And, you know, they're not playing this event. And it's like, hey, sorry, I'll put you somewhere similar, I guess. But yeah, it's funny, though.
Yeah, I think it's the, like, bring your local game or your, like Nick had said, the original idea was to bring your game and bring it to that whole tavern experience, right? I mean, I guess it like makes almost too much sense that it hadn't been done before.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of exploded from that to what we are now. It's a lot
and
of fun.
We did not get that many people bringing their own groups.
Right.
I mean, anyone that's played in a group knows that there's a setting for it, right? If you've ever tried to switch your group from one guy's house to another house, just the snacks being different can cause the table.
Oh, it throws every
chaos,
yeah.
You know?
100%.
So we found there was such a calling for, hey, I don't have a group, but I really want to play D&D. And we're a college town too, so we get a lot of college kids that just want to try it, you know, want to come and hang out and have a good time. And that's what we do. So,
and hey,
it works
beer.
Out right. You hear that from so many people who come to play with us. It's like, oh yeah, I've been wanting to do this for years, but I haven't been able to find a group. Cameron and I, when I moved to Orlando just a little over a year ago now, that's how we met the rest of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
We just happened to see an ad somewhere and we're like, hey, you know, we want to play D&D. We don't know anybody here who can play with us. And, I think that really ties into growing the community, which is one of our core messages.
For
being
sure.
able to provide a game for people who really want to play, but don't have the group ready and available.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, go on any forum online, like, you know, Facebook, whatever. I would have to say, like, rough estimate, at least 70% of that traffic looking for a game. And
yeah.
You know, just to be able to scratch that itch a little bit is, you know, obviously what's driving a lot of our interest. And then, you know, piggybacking off what Ryder was saying, fallout from this has been like our Discord. And one of my favorite things is to watch these people who have come to our event, then network within our Discord and then form their own home game from that initial, you know, meeting at one of our events. To me, that's like death of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're happy to design our way out of it. So we gave them kind of a platform where we're like, okay, now that you nerds have seen each other, go off and prosper kind of thing. If you never come back to one of our events because you formed a home game and you play for the rest of your life, like Ferg said, chef's kiss. That's what we're here for. And, yeah, it's a wonderful thing. The Discord is what I'm most proud of anything that we've done, because I've seen so many groups form and go away, and then you don't see them in the Discord again, and you just imagine them, you know, idyllic on a farm somewhere.
The happily ever after
role
playing. Yeah. And we've got a lot of people in the Discord.
Yeah, not as many as I'd like to see, but yeah, it gets chaotic for sure. For sure. But yeah.
Great.
All right, well, a question that we have to ask here, because this podcast that we do does not really focus on D&D. We just focus on roleplay games in general. What other requests or games have you run for these events? Is it always only D&D, or are there people who want to see other things, or have you wanted to run other things aside from D&D?
So that's definitely one of the future goals, is expanding outward to other games. I found that most of the people who are interested in playing with us or coming to play with us, D&D is the one they're interested in playing because obviously it's got the biggest hype. One.
It's
right
so
now.
Well known.
It's the one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, through all the popular media, Critical Role, of course, really expanded the popularity of D&D. Now Stranger Things has become so big or has been so
big. That got us a lot younger of a market as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
But we've had requests for other things. I've heard Pathfinder being thrown around a few times, Call of Cthulhu, Starfinder. I've had some people interested in Starfinder, and that's definitely something we will look into. One, as demand grows, and two, as we find DMs who also know that system and they're comfortable writing a one-shot adventure in that framework.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem we run into, right? Where you have one guy, maybe two, saying, hey, I would really love to play Numenera. And then me as a DM, I'm like, I love Numenera. I run Numenera. Cool. Can we get four more people? And we can't, right? So
we just got a message on Instagram. There was a guy who was interested but only wanted to play GURPS.
Yeah,
wow.
Right?
I was like, I don't know. Wow, I don't know how to put together a GURPS
exactly.
table yeah. for you.
And,
sir,
and that's something that we're trying to, like Ryder said, kind of grow into, where I believe for October, our plan was to have a Call of Cthulhu game that people could opt into.
Nice.
And
Cameron, as a matter of fact, was thinking about putting something together.
Yeah, and I think it's a great idea. I would love to introduce people to other tabletop games, because D&D is a monster in the industry. But let's be honest, it's not the best.
No.
It's really a bludgeon to try and build a character in. But
I mean, it's fun for what it is, and it has, Critical Role is a fantastic example of this. If you have a cool DM, you can make any game become anything that you want it to be. But it is not a system that supports much of anything outside of kicking down doors and killing monsters and stealing their shit. So,
you guys were playing a pirate-themed RPG, and I can't tell you how many times 7C. I've had to bend and break D&D to try and fit a pirate motif. Because I didn't have players that were willing to learn a new RPG. Like,
wow,
one that you're playing.
We'll just come back to the studio next time. We'll just get some dice and we'll just play 7C.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
I love 7C.
Do it.
I
haven't
RPGs.
Seen anyone else play it until I met you guys.
Yeah.
Oh.
You came to the right place.
Found a brother.
Because we play basically only 7C.
No, we play a lot of stuff. We
nowadays,
like to sample a lot of stuff, but recently, 7C has been one of our top. It's probably our number one most regular, but I'd say top three.
Yeah. It's what we always come back.
Yeah.
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 I think the hardest part about home. That for us is, like, if you were to teach that rule set, 5E of Dungeons and Dragons has such an easy rule set. It's so, this is going to get a lot of hate. It is very streamlined compared to previous editions.
It is.
And I think don't get me wrong, viewing public, I don't like it better. It is just easier to teach quickly to new players that have either never played an RPG before or have never played D&D before. And it's so easy to get the ball rolling where, I've been trying to set up a game of Spire, right? And the intro into Spire requires so much on the DM and requires so much on the players to know about their setting already, and B, understand the dynamic of this game is very different than other people that are playing it. But we have the opposite problem too, where everyone sits down and they expect a Matthew Mercer, right? If you can't break that one way or the other, either by giving them a new game to play or just showing them that, hey, that's one way to play D&D, you end up with disappointed people, which isn't what we're out to do.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge part of it anyway. The Mercer effect, people have an expectation.
It's massive.
They've seen something. Matthew Mercer, I very much respect and love what he does, but that's not the only way, and I think that's the whole thing, part of, why people think that's the way to do it and why D&D is the way to do it, so to speak, is because there's so many examples out there. We don't have 10 different shows of Call of Cthulhu you can watch right now. You can find maybe 10 different shows over the past 10 years.
Right.
Maybe. I'm trying to think about that. But like you can find 10 different streams probably streaming today on Twitch doing D&D.
Right now.
Like right now as we're talking.
Yeah.
You know? And that's just not something that other systems have because it is so well known. And if you want to be a successful stream, you'll do the thing that's so well known. And it's circular, you know? Yep.
Yeah.
Right. Well, even if you're not familiar with role-playing games, a lot of the terminology D&D has
become part of our...
People will recognize.
Yeah.
Yeah, saving throws.
Slowly osmosed natural 20s. So many other things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think what you guys are doing is such an, you know, integral part of that, too, in showing those new RPGs. I know the reason I get hype about different RPGs is usually because I heard them on a podcast or I listened to a live play of people playing them and having fun.
Right.
And showing that you can still have so much fun without a Wizards of the Coast backed product. And sometimes even more fun, you know, I think that's huge. And there, I don't want to say there's not enough podcasts out there because that takes away your people, but I think
in
there
some ways there isn't
enough.
Though.
Yeah,
yeah,
they
it really isn't.
Things need that kind of representation because the amount of work that goes into these rule sets and these different things and the amount of people playing it, you know, whether you think there are or not, it's still huge. Whether they're represented via YouTube or you know, podcasts or something like that. But yeah, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things, you know, getting those players that expect the Mercer. And, you know, you don't have a session zero to get everybody's head in the right place. You're just understanding your players a little bit and they understand you as the GM. It's, you know, it's one of those big hurdles. And same thing with it, like any event gaming. Like Mark and I recently did some convention GMing and nobody knows what to expect, which is it's utter chaos.
It's a whole different world.
I find that the swirling of the chaos really helps me in that, they don't know me. They don't know my style. They don't know how different from Matthew Mercer I am. But in our events, sometimes they don't know the game. They don't know the people around them. And that little bit of strangeness everywhere is better than only strangeness coming from me.
Well, part of that makes that easier that with your setting and with a con game is consensual strangeness. If I'm going to go to somebody's house and three of them know each other and there's two of us that are completely new, I am not on safe, neutral territory. This is very weird and I'm going to be spending a lot of time watching and seeing how they are and very much in my shell. If I'm going out to a public place and everybody doesn't know everybody, or at least that's what they think, that's the perspective, and everybody's coming for a one shot and it's totally just this open thing and I can go grab a beer, thank God. It's completely flexible and people just feel freer to be... free, you know, and it doesn't have to matter.
One of the things I like, everyone here has done it, is playing at other tables. So if I, you know, if I'm not DMing an event, some event, I'll sit down and play at another DM. And I think having that ally in your party as a DM, knowing that person is there, knowing their intentions, knowing their play style, things like that, can really, really start to unlock.
I mean, you have a ringer in the audience that's going to throw the grenade when you need somebody to throw the grenade and just cause some shit, you know?
See, you mentioned a ringer, right? Like, I love having hidden villains where one of my players is bad, you know?
Oh, my God, yes.
And I
so
never choose the DM. Never. I always choose the person that it is their brand first time ever playing, and it's always better. I promise you.
Yeah.
It's so good. Oh, yeah. I tell people all the time, I will take any new players you have. I don't care if they've never played. I don't know. I don't care if they've never seen a die before, because they have no bad habits, right? Yep. They just take to it like a newborn babe, and it's wonderful. I love having new players with no habits because they take to the story so much more readily. And
and they open your eyes too. You know, we get stuck in our ways a little bit, and you know how things are going. This is how you
DM
expect
bias,
it. And then as soon as you get a new player, it's just pure chaos.
It's so much fun. And we tell people all the time, like our DMs that come in to interview, if you could call it that, were like, this is DMing like how it's meant to be. It is because, right, you have to foster quite a group to get a good home group that operates at the level that a group of strangers will after 30 minutes. It's pretty crazy. And it, the fact that it can just be over in a flash and everyone had fun and everyone sits around afterwards, has a beer. It's phenomenal. It's a great high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
It's a good time. So yeah, Mark, when are you coming out to one of our events?
Tracking those and definitely have to pop in.
All right. Looks well, pretty awesome. Plug time, if we haven't already. Adventures on Tap Orlando.com is where you can find tickets and see where we're at. We also have a, I'm sorry, that was AOT Orlando.com. Adventures on Tap Orlando is our Instagram. Our marketing person is killing me with her eyes right now, I'm sure.
She's in the other room. She's recovering.
Wonderful. So our Instagram is really where you see where we're going, where we're coming next, and how much money we've raised, you know, who we've raised it for, things like that. But our Discord is our pride and joy. And you can get links to that at either our website or our Instagram. Jump in and have fun. If you're in the greater Orlando area, we'd love to see you.
Absolutely. Next event is on September the 24th, and tickets are on sale now.
They're also sold out.
They are also sold out.
I was about to say, looking at it.
Yeah.
Well, then come for October.
Tickets up pretty soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have an October cosplay extravaganza. It's going to be a blast. So.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yep. Little costume contest, getting the spirit of Halloween.
Yep. And as we get things rolling a little bit cleaner, you know, we're shooting for two, maybe three events in a month, rather than these one big one a month. We'll have, you know, two or three little ones. And that'll give more people in different parts of Orlando and different parts of really Florida the chance to come out to one of our events. Makes it a lot easier for us to move around when it's only two tables. So
nice.
Yeah, that's the goal. And yeah, it's a good time.
I think, yeah, you got a lot of opportunity. You know, if you do ever want to expand out to other states, obviously there's breweries everywhere and breweries are very popular. I'm speaking from a heavy brewery town here in Colorado, and Colorado is known for having a lot of breweries. There's definitely a lot of opportunities for this. And I'm really excited to see how you guys grow over the next years and see and maybe meet with you guys again sometime and hear some great stories down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Where do you stand on the altitude for Colorado? Because I went out to a beer fest out there and got drunk on like six little shots.
Oh, yeah. No. So there are two factors that mess with you. One, altitude definitely affects you, which is amazing when I go down to lower altitudes.
You drink like a horse when you come down here.
Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous. I'm like, cool. All right. You want to do a what now? Yeah, I'm going to drink you under the table. Let's go. So that's the main thing that I always will caution people is like, it's not what you expect and it'll hit you like a scorpion tail. You'll be fine. Then you'll be on your ass. Like, you won't see it coming and it'll just hit you. And the other thing is, most of the state is a desert state. It's a desert, level of altitude, and, that level of dryness also screws with people. So if you are up at different altitudes, a different amount of, you know, especially we're not humid here, not anything close to the Midwest or to Florida. So, you know, in places like that, where you could like stand outside and take a deep breath and now you've got your water for the day. That doesn't work here, and you have to actually drink it.
We do live in a swamp, yes.
It's been brutal the past few weeks.
You have to drink water here a lot, and I always suggest
we just swim through the air down here.
Pretty much, yeah.
100% humidity at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah,
I went to I don't know why they have so many beer festivals up there, because as soon as you travel there, I got to maybe six booths, and then I was done. And I paid for tickets, and I was very disappointed. Had to eat a banana and go home.
It'll mess with you.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, anything we want to talk about before we?
I mean, there's so many things. We had like an itinerary and a plan.
Yeah,
didn't happen.
It's like
a role play game.
We talk a lot.
It's like a role play game. Yeah. Plans just don't work.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you sent us a wonderful Reddit post, and you also sent us a wonderful theme for the D&D 1 rules. If you want to quickly talk about either of those, you know, you guys are so organized.
We can do some talking.
Studying. Yeah.
Let's talk.
We'll try and keep it concise.
Nosh. I might need to crack open a beer over here. No, it's not. It's before noon. I can't do that.
Not here. It's not.
Don't lie to me. I know you can.
All right. I know we got some topics to talk about, you guys, but I think we'll pick that up on the next episode. So that's it for this episode. Thank you guys for joining me. It's been wonderful having this little conversation. And yeah, we'll pick these topics up on the next episode. I might actually go get a beer. Is that bad?